We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 569 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and he's Pablo Gould Blanco of BBC Cornwall, Nesquim Podcast, and Barca Buzz. And yesterday, making his debut on the newly established, again, Barca One, and in particular on Barca Live, which you and I were both on back in 2021. So yeah, it was good to see that they brought you back.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on again, Dan. Obviously a good win for Barca last night. And yeah, thank you for the introduction. Yeah, it was good to be back. Good to be back. And, you know, nice to be able to go on there and talk after a good performance. The vibes were good yesterday, I think. So, it was a nice one.
Yeah, vibes being good is always important. Like yesterday, I had something in the evening. So I was planning on, oh, man, I'm going to have to make people wait 6-7 hours for the match review. And I didn't know if they would win or not. But once it was 3-1, I was like, I got to get this out. So you just spit something out. Get it out there, make sure it was out nice and quick. But I'm glad that there was some time to let it marinate and think about some of the bigger stuff and what stands out from yesterday. Because I feel like the things that I had pointed out yesterday in the five headlines have now just become, not to say greater, but to even more detail, that Cubarsí and Lamine Mall will start there and that kind of stuff. But the things that Xavi got right yesterday, basically our outline for today, is as follows. Either whether he chose to or not, because he has to, he trusted in the kids again, Cubarsí and Lamine Mall, that's going to be our headline here. Then the offside trap, I want to hit that again. Rafinha at left wing, and then more broadly, Xavi's good decisions in the starting 11. And then when I say substitutions, I'm talking about one substitution in particular, and we'll reveal that player and talk about him later. But we're going to hit all that stuff. Also, the big picture, we'll hit that as well. And for now, we're going to start with the kids. The one word that sticks out to me for both Cubarsí and Lamine Mall is, and I know we overuse it as Kool-Aids, but it's pausa. They have that pausa that exists in the way that they play. And I know with the hyperbole for both of them, I'm already repeating myself, but the one new thing I'll say is that they both, with that pausa, have just an incredible sense of timing and an understanding of the game that allows them to already just be not only first team players, but contributors. The game is already slowed down for them in ways that, having watched young players for forever, I cannot begin to understand how slow the game is to a 16 and a 17-year-old. That cannot be understated. Cubarsí was the defender that Xavi was trusting to step centrally into the midfield in possession, which did make sense. I actually questioned Xavi that with that going into the game, which having Araujo as the, I figured it'd be Araujo as the left center back, and then Cubarsí natural right foot as the right center back. I feel like their buildup has been better that way, and that's the better recipe to break a press. But Cubarsí as the left center back was so gosh darn good anyway that it didn't matter. It was nullifying that. And with the understanding that Osimhen is trying to get over to his right, having him have to go across the Araujo and as in create with his left or run onto it, onto his right, and then have Araujo go there defending with his right back to goal, it all made sense. And having Cubarsí be as press resistant as he is as well. Same thing with Lamine Yamal. They're just so press resistant in a way that, I mean, yeah, it was Pedri when he was 16. It's the same feeling as those guys. And by those two being so press resistant, it did nullify one of the things that Napoli does best, which is press high and outwork you in that 4-3-3. It was just wonderful by Xavi, of course, to set it up the way he did, but to trust the two players who wound up breaking it all open for Barcelona, even though they're 16 and 17, to have Xavi say, hey, I'm not putting it on you, but if you do these things, we're going to win this game. And the two kids did the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite incredible, to be honest, because I think I did a tweet and I was like, I wonder how many more weeks or how many more games in a row will keep going, coming on Twitter or whatnot and saying, Lamine Nkubarsi, only 16 and 17. Isn't that incredible? Because it is. And I watch it every game and I'm trying to think, like, when I was 16 and 17, and it's like, how are you playing at that level? You said the Palsa, how are they that calm? I even look at Kubarsi, for example, because he's involved in more physical duels. How do you not, against a striker like Osimhen, get like rattled and get like, oh, you know, I'm a little bit like worried now? That's how I was when I was playing football at that age. In a Champions League game for Barcelona, I can't comprehend how impressive that is, genuinely, but it's the best academy in the world for that reason. How many players come through the pipeline and just perform to an incredible level immediately? Like, it's one of the most unique things in the world. Kubarsi, you said, yeah, mentioned it. He's been on the left. Araujo's been on the left in recent weeks when those two have played together. Did fantastically. I think we saw right from the off that fantastic ball he did to Fermin on the first chance he missed. We just walloped it over the entire defence. I mean, that was an absolute worldie, really. But right throughout the 90 minutes, like I said, like you said, Osimhen coming onto the right-hand side, the way he dealt with a striker like him, physical, quick. And then the way he brought the ball out the back too. He's so calm. I think Xavi said he always finds the third man, and he does. You know, he's always finding spaces for Barcelona. And he's just massive for us, Kubarsi. I mean, there were some question marks as to whether they would start him or Inigo Martinez before the game, and it's like the question of experience, or do you go for Kubarsi? I actually said before the game, go for Kubarsi. I know it's easy to say now, but I did, I promise. But, and I think it was the right call, you know, for the obvious reason that Kubarsi is just playing at an incredible level, and to get MVP in his first Champions League game, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And then Lamine is, I think we've probably known for some time, one of, if not the biggest talent coming out of La Masia, to be fair, for quite a few years. So people following him back to the age of even 13, 12, 11. But when he came in at the start of the season, he looked really good. And obviously at the end of last one, I wonder whether he went through a little bit of a patch though, in sort of like November, December, where I was like, yeah, brilliant young talent, but probably need a bit of time just to like let him bed in a bit. But then he came back in the team at the start of 2024. And I mean, my God, just to have that talent at 16, to be the best player on the pitch every game, it is ridiculous again. Even on a physical level, when I see him taking on, you know, 30-year-old left backs, even like someone like Mario Rui last night, who I thought would give Lamine a bit, but they can't get near him, really. He's just that good. I mean, even when he slipped over at the end and then the little Cruyff turn through his legs, I mean, cameos like that are just brilliant. But even his overall play, you know, is his choice of pass, the timing of it all, you know, the ball to Rafinha for the second goal for Barca, got it all spot on. Both of those were just sublime performances, but they're doing it every 3 days now. And I genuinely cannot believe it when I'm watching it sometimes, because sometimes I see Lamine or Kubarsi get the ball and I'm just thinking, you know, mistake, you know, the poor, like, they're children, they're going to like slip up here, someone's going to come in and ram them aside, but like, it doesn't happen. They are like levels above most players on the pitch at that age. I can't believe it.
Yeah, with Lamine Yamal, you mentioned about his timing and you talk about his instincts. And it's that even positional play instincts that are incredible for Lamine Yamal. It's not just, you know, a lot of young players, and we see this, they get the ball. And when I grew up playing, there were players that just naturally, they understand what to do with the ball. It's just, it's not thinking, it's natural for them. A lot of Brazilian talents are like that. And Lamine Yamal has this way about him when he receives the ball. He's receiving it in the right spot. It's not just magic once he gets it, right? He's not waiting for ball to feet. And not to compare him and Dembélé, it's a bit unfair to both of them, but Dembélé wanted the ball to feet. And then once he had ball to feet and he was going vertically, that's when the magic happened. But Lamine Yamal has been so terrific off the ball as well. Yesterday, knowing to receive the ball out wide, when to stretch, when to receive it basically right on the touchline, and already have his body. I mean, both of them in their body positioning, their body orientation, those are things that usually with young players, I say, all right, he needs to work on that. And even Gabi from year one to year two, I said, if Gabi receives, he can play a little bit better at a higher level because it's a little bit faster when you're playing the ball. And Gabi's body orientation in tackles has always been, I mean, that's his instinct and it's always been great. But as he refined his game and how to be more important as a facilitator or to control that midfield, we've watched Gabi's progression from two seasons ago to last year to this year, and it was incredible, and that's why losing Gabi was such a bummer. But for Lamine Yamal to know when to start completely out wide, know when to run in behind, know when to, again, slow down his dribble. And again, that's too. It's not even just always with kids, it's always 100%, right? It's always as fast as you can go, but he's not like that either. The cutbacks, slowing it down, when to recycle to Koundé in the second half, especially. I know people are arguing that Barca didn't have much control, but no, Gundogan, when he moved over to the right side, the triangle between Gundogan and Koundé and Lamine Yamal kind of wore Napoli down in their half of the field. And you mentioned too about the history. Barcelona has, they're the first team now in Champions League history to have two U18 starters in a knockout match. Because yes, U18 players do play in the Champions League. That's not that crazy. But to trust two players in a knockout match, that means that you finish top two in your group and you're probably a pretty decent side historically. And to say that, all right, we're a team who's trusting that. And again, to have that team be an FC Barcelona is pretty incredible. And you mentioned that pass by Cubarsí in the 13th minute there, the one over the top to Fermín López. That was awesome. Then he had a diagonal to Lamine Yamal in the 24th minute. That was also awesome. And then he had another diagonal to Koundé in the 36th minute. And I caught myself. I didn't mention any of those three except for the Fermín one, but I talked more about Fermín missing than I did about Cubarsí actually delivering the pass. I've already almost normalized the passing from Cubarsí from the back, and I shouldn't do that because I went back, and people have heard me say this for years. I'm looking at my notes. Basically, every time Lenglet in his first two seasons played a diagonal ball, I'd write it down because I think, all right, that doesn't happen very often. Let me write that down. Every time Araujo in his first three seasons would play a diagonal ball of like 30 yards, I go, oh, look at that. Isn't that cool? That one moment that Araujo had, he's building, he's learning something. Cubarsí's doing it three times in the first half of this game. I mean, and when you have a center back that can open up the field like that and play those diagonal balls, what that allows you to do is get the best out of João Cancelo as well. It means that Cancelo, instead of having to receive the ball in Barcelona's half of the field and to do something himself, potentially lose it in his half or near midfield, now you have him defending, staying at home and defending a little bit better like that and picking his moments. The second goal was scored on the counter because Cancelo was able to pick his moments and get forward at that time when prior to that, defending on the set piece, he was able to stay on his line. Cubarsí, by making the reactive defending that he does, allows Cancelo to start and move that line of conversation higher. And then again, be a little more conservative with his role and pick his spots a lot better because he doesn't need to build up with Cubarsí. Cubarsí can step into the midfield and create himself. Even if he's under pressure, he has a 30-yard on the ground pass back to Ter Stegen. Or again, he can spray it to basically the open man because it was in that final third, Napoli on that press was trying to create a 7-on-6 combination, which means somebody is open. Is that Lamine Yamal? Is it Rafinha running in behind? Is it Koundé? And Cubarsí seemed to find that player every time. Cubarsí, I mean, yes, on the eye test against Osimhen said that he was terrific, but when thinking about this game farther and looking back at some of the individual moments, I mean, Cubarsí was unbelievably excellent. The Man of the Match award almost didn't do justice, just how gosh darn good he was.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you think of great duos, who do you think of? Jordan and Pippen or LeBron and Dwayne Wade? I mean, I talk about basketball a lot here on this podcast, but for the Barcelona version, there's Piqué and Puyol or Piqué and Mascherano, or the easy example of Xavi and Iniesta. And as you can hear from my voice, the perfect teammates aren't just professional athletes. It's cold season. I guess the flu and cold medicine, perfect teammates as well. But in this case, when it comes to growing your business, that's you and Shopify. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. To be honest, I've been doing this show long enough, and as I mentioned, it's cold and flu season. You hear it in my voice, especially during the holiday season. So whenever it comes to this business, anything that I can set up and kind of have working in the background that I know and can trust is just plugging along without my attention, those are the things that I really value at this point. So when my brain is foggy and all I can do is manage to turn on the microphone, talk to the guest, or just talk to myself and get out a piece of content, everything else, having that all automated or working in the background, that's been important to keeping me sane. And that's the thing about something like Shopify. What I do love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. So no matter how big or small, how good of a month or how bad of a month, things are just the same working in the background. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is a global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs on every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tbpod, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tbpod now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/tbpod.
Yeah, he was superb. I mean, I wondered if they were going to give it to someone else. I wasn't sure who. Maybe kind of sell off, because, you know, they love to give it to a goal scorer. Even Lamine, I thought, because generally attackers get it. But for him to get it, I think you saw the celebrations at the end with him and, like, all of the other La Masia players, like Margui and Hector Ford and Casado, came onto the pitch and stuff. And that was just lovely, wasn't it? But that is what Barca's all about, the celebrations at the end as well in front of the fans, you know. It just felt like a big win last night, I think, for a lot of reasons. The injuries were definitely one of them. I mean, I will say that obviously Napoli, wherever they are in Serie A at the moment, not in the best position, of course. And, you know, you'd expect Barcelona to knock them out, you would. But we haven't made the quarterfinals in, what, 4 years now or whatnot. So it was a massively important evening for Barca. I think you could feel that, actually. The reaction after the game from the fans, the staff, the players, felt like quite a big moment, despite the fact that, you know, it's beating Napoli and you probably should be doing that, actually. And maybe some of the games in La Liga, like Athletic Club, are probably even a lot harder than that, right? So, you know, in that regard, then, you know, maybe we haven't beaten the most incredible side. But in Champions League, it's always different. And Napoli are, you know, they can be a physical side. You mentioned the press, so they've got killers in attack. We did a really good job of nullifying them, I thought. I thought we limited them to few opportunities. Kubarsi was a big part in that.
Well, I said yesterday that this was Barcelona's biggest win of the season. Financially, of course. But I don't want to underplay that either, that financially and what the goals are of a season, Barcelona unwisely put making the quarterfinal in their budget, which, again, is like an absurd thing. And it's absurd that Liga even approves that, which would, if they hadn't approved that, that would have meant that certainly Vitor Roque, I know he came in for the Gavi exception, but they wouldn't even have had the money to register Vitor Roque at all in January. And they, I believe it would have been Inigo Martinez who would have been the one unable to be registered if that Champions League money had not been approved in the budget. Mm. And at least one other player, because he's only at like 5.5 million or whatever he's at. So it would have been basically two or three players who, if La Liga had not approved that Barcelona were going to do this thing, and then they did that thing. But the reason I do say biggest win of the season too is that the Champions League, I think for a lot of teams, and this is really hard too, when you'll talk to other teams and say, okay, you know, you can't get over the Champions League hump, because a lot of teams haven't been able to get into a Champions League hump because one team wins every season. And even making the final for teams, I mean, for Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, what, PSG even, Barcelona, not making at least the semifinal feels like a failure in those seasons. Yeah. And so not everybody gets to do that. Somebody's going to be left out, especially if Inter Milan or AC Milan are the ones getting there. Or there's a surprise like Monaco in 2017 when the young Kylian Mbappe. So those surprises mean that big players, big teams and big players and all that are going to be left out. And you don't want to take it for granted. Like, I've been doing this show twice a week, long enough, every match, that you don't take for granted when your team is finally able to get over that hump. That's why I say it is the biggest win for Barcelona of their season. I said, I think the debate would be not Xavi's tenure, because I think, the Spanish Super Cup was huge. I'd say the El Clasico that basically helped them win Liga, that was bigger last season. But this one for this year, this was it. And I think even Xavi's legacy, the big picture on this, because we'll jump in that right now, is that I do feel like, not to say the rest of it doesn't matter, because finishing second is also still very important, because that means you also go to the Spanish Super Cup next year. And it just puts you in a better headspace, puts you in a better spot to build for next season. But I feel like it's mission accomplished with Xavi at this point. I think he is going to at least finish second, likely, or potentially third in the Liga, which is fine. And at least getting to the quarterfinal of the Champions League, that was, not to say the minimum, but that was the goal for Xavi. And while things looked like they were going off the rails, I do give credit to him because he changed things up. Even basically as he's announcing he's leaving, Christensen moves to defensive midfielder. Now he has Rafinha playing on the left wing, which again was the right choice. When picking that starting 11, he could have said, all right, I'm going to put João Félix on the left. Mm-hmm. Rafinha has a high right interior because those are experienced players. But again, he didn't do that. He said, Fermín López is my midfielder. I'm going to trust him in that position. And I'm going to play Rafinha in a position at left wing where he generally, and I'll say it, stinks because he can't really take anybody on that left wing because he's so reliant on his left foot. So it just kind of 1-1 over there. And yet Rafinha was excellent working with Cancelo, getting him behind. And Fermín López, that was the one name that I would have mentioned as a man of the match. If he had played the whole 90, I think it might have been Fermín because not only did he get the goal, but I mean, he was his was 5-7 on ground duel. I said yesterday in the five headlines, he had zero fouls committed. He was 2 for 3 on his accurate long balls, 2 key passes, a clearance, an intercept, everything. 5 ball recoveries. Fermín López was also, again, I don't want to get it lost because the other guys are talking about their teenagers, but Fermín López was also excellent. Mm-hmm. And so for Xavi, say what you want about him and the question about the locker room, but he has complete faith, and Cubarsí and Lamine Yamal and Fermín López feel completely supported. And in the big picture, those three getting support almost matters more than João. I mean, who cares if João Félix is like, well, I'm not really starting for Barcelona. I mean, 3 of them are under contract for Barcelona for a while, especially if they sign renewals. And the other one is going back to Atletico Madrid. And in theory, it's only Laporta and João Mendes' problem and not really the club of FC Barcelona if João Félix is happy to come off the bench or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you made the point there about Fermín. I think he gives us a bit of what we miss with Gavi, I think, with his energy and his tenacity in midfield. I think him and Rafinha are the two I look at, especially when Gavi's not there, for that bit of energy, the bit of bite, and that they work so hard off the ball, both of them. So I think they're both massive players for us. I mean, Fermín, I think it was a right call to put him in midfield because I think if we've got Christensen as the pivot and then Gundogan, and then if you put someone like Rafinha in there, then you've only really got one natural midfielder in there. I think that creates a bit of an imbalance, and then the midfield looks a bit ugly because I'm not sure. I think whilst Christensen's giving us more security, I'm still watching and I'm thinking, you're not a midfielder whenever I watch him. And I feel a little bit sorry for him because I think he's such a great centre-back. And in midfield, his like best qualities perhaps aren't being used because he has to be really quick on the ball and 1-2 touch in there, which I think he's struggling with a little bit. But he is doing, you know, it's for the good of the team. And then Rafinha on that left wing, I mean, I'm not sure if you want to switch over to this now, but like, and I'm interested in what you think about Rafinha because for me, I really rate Rafinha, but I know that he might well be the one Barcelona player who divides opinion the most on social media because I really, really see a lot of stick towards Rafinha on quite a consistent basis. So I'm interested to hear what you think about him. But I think, to be fair, since Xavi came in, I'm not sure what people were expecting from him, but he's got, you know, I think he was the only player in 2023 with 10-plus goals and 10-plus assists for Barcelona. Does contribute a lot. I think even when he's not scoring, he's one of our most, if not our most involved player in attack week in, week out. You know, works incredibly hard. It's not like he's a slouch up front and he's like a prima donna, give me the ball, and if not, leave me alone. Works really hard for the team. Could be way more clinical. Could get more numbers for Barcelona. Absolutely. Could be better at 1v1s. Absolutely agree. But at the same time, it's not like he's the odd one out in a perfect team, right? You know, I'd agree in criticising Rafinha more if he was playing in Pep's Barca, but he's not. For me, he actually stands out in quite a lot of games because a lot of the time this season, we've been really flat. And I've sort of looked at Rafinha to say, are you going to do anything here? Because if you're not, we're in trouble. So him on the left wing, like you say, I'm not usually a big fan of it either. I think we saw it at the start of last season when Dembélé was on the right and he was on the left. And he just looked a bit awkward there, not as comfortable. But was brilliant last night, to be fair. Really good. It just worked to perfection. Xavi got that tactical move spot on. And with João Cancelo there too, it works really well. So I actually think he'll go for that against Atleti on Sunday too. But yeah, for me, Rafinha, I'm actually a big fan of him. I really rate Rafinha as a player, but I understand that he splits a lot of opinion in the fan base.
Well, I do, for both Rafinha and Fermín López, again, want to give Xavi credit here, because while I was just praising them, and I think we do think about Rafinha and Fermín López as what they do when Barcelona has the ball, but it was actually when Napoli were playing out of possession where I think, again, you saw why Xavi was so correct in starting Rafinha and Fermín López. Xavi looked in the mirror, I think, at some point. I don't know if he actually did this, but I'm imagining Xavi looking in the mirror and saying, this is Europe. We might not have possession. We may not be the play, even though we're at home, right? All the things are built, right? It's Napoli. They might not be doing great in Serie A or whatever it is, but we are Barcelona, and yet we cannot rest on the laurels of being Barcelona. We may not have possession, and they didn't. They lost the possession battle 52-48 in yesterday's game. And I wouldn't say that was by design, but Xavi was prepared for that. And I think, yes, there's, again, an argument about, while without having De Jong and Gavi and Pedri, and even with them this season, Barcelona and this version of Barcelona, why Xavi, one of the main reasons I think is leaving, is that he's not been able to get the top level players over the line to be able to really dominate and control matches the way that the top, top elite clubs do, which is what in big picture also makes me worry about even the big picture of what happens if in the quarterfinal, Barcelona is completely blown off the field over two ties against, I mean, in a tie against City or Madrid or Arsenal, PSG or Bayern or whoever, right? If they get blown off the field, are you going to forget about what the goal was, what the mission was in the quarterfinal? But again, when talking about Rafinha and Fermín López yesterday, I thought defensively, when Napoli were trying to play out of the back, which is what they want to do, that is where the choice to start those two is important. Rafinha was so essential defensively, and that has been such a major thing. He was better than Dembélé last season defensively, and so I think Barcelona were lacking something on the wings when he didn't start. And then, as I said, it's not pretty, but Rafinha, to your point, the numbers always seem to work at the end of a season and say, well, Rafinha actually scored and assisted. What numbers are comparable to a player from, if you take his minutes and usage at Leeds, and then you basically, you know, proportion that over to what he's doing at Barcelona, that's kind of who he's been forever. And now you're really only talking about the 55 million euro price tag and where he came in Barcelona's cycle. And you're having a debate more about Barcelona, how he fits in that whole narrative of where Barca is, as opposed to just looking at the player of who he is. Because defensively, he was really important to getting back and dealing with Politano, who I thought was bright, was important. And of course, that being Napoli, they were trying to A, dribble straight through the middle at Christensen and basically make Christensen turn as much as possible and come, bring him out to the wings. And they wanted to try to get to the right wing to try to victimize that space that they knew Cancelo would leave. But I said he was a bit more reserved yesterday, which was the game plan. And Rafinha helped out by defending in the moments that Cancelo wasn't necessarily positionally exactly where he needed to be. And then Rafinha would bust back. And the other choice, Fermín López, to have him man mark Lobotka. And it's funny to me that Xavi kind of gave this away in the presser the day before when he said that Lobotka is the most essential, or whatever his exact words were, that he was the player he was worried about. Because if Napoli were going to build up and break through Barcelona, it come on the foot of Lobotka. So I found it interesting that Fermín López man marked him almost out of that game. And again, that goes back to that. If you start Rafinha and João Félix instead of Fermín and Rafinha, does João Félix do that same defensive job helping out Cancelo against Politano? No. I'm saying no. And then does Rafinha as the high right interior, does he do the same defensive job in the middle of the park that Fermín López did against Lobotka? Maybe, but also I'd rather trust the natural midfielder in that position. And so it was even when Barcelona didn't have the ball where I think Xavi got this right. And again, the idea is going to be, well, I remember the moments when the second half started when Barcelona didn't have control, or the fact that, yes, I'm very frustrated the goal was scored off a throw-in because Xavi's Barcelona concede way too much on throw-ins. It's the first time where I've said, just in a stop ball situation, you've got to have some kind of idea. Don't turn off when the ball is being thrown in. But it's all that defensive stuff, to your point, that I really enjoy. And I think that Rafinha does add that to it. And I think it's also important to note as well that Lamine Yamal, by the, what was it, the second, I think it was the second move I had written down, by the third minute, there it is. By the third minute, Lamine Yamal had roasted Mario Rui by such a large margin. And I was surprised that Cazorla had started Mario Rui over Matias Oliveira, because Oliveira is, I think, he's just faster. Quicker defender, even though he's not positioning as good and he doesn't deliver as good of a ball. So I think he wanted the playmaking of Rui, but I think athletically he should have started Oliveira. And once Rui was completely toasted twice in the first 3 minutes, then by the fifth minute, they were doubling. So Lamine Yamal pulls one over. And again, that's the essential thing is why Lamine Yamal is so important, because Dembélé, well, it was Messi, Dembélé, Lamine Yamal, those are players that require two guys on him. Coutinho, they won it. They really didn't double. Griezmann in the same way because he played out on the wing. They didn't really double him. Rafinha doesn't get doubled. They try to do 1-1. João Félix, same thing, 1-1. But for Lamine Yamal to bring a double, that means Rafinha has that space to run to the half spaces. So it all works together. And as I said, I'm just really impressed. And the 3-1 to me on second viewing and as I continue to think about that match, I think Barcelona were even better than I gave them credit for yesterday.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I was thinking in the game that, I mean, before, was it Lindstrom's header at the end? I was actually thinking, I think it's harsh that Barcelona have conceded today. But then that header went wide and I thought, okay, I'll take conceding one goal here because, you know, I can't believe he's missed that. But I do think Barcelona were far superior to Napoli. I think it was a well-earned win. And you're right, I think the scoreline either fair or even a tad harsh on Barca. It was a more than deserved, you know, passage to the quarterfinals of Barcelona last night. It really was. And I think we got things tactically spot on. We mauled Napoli in many areas of the game. We'll get onto the substitutions later, I'm sure. But I think all the aspects of it, Xabi got right, to be fair, which is difficult. With players missing, you probably don't have like the pieces you want to put in the puzzle. You probably didn't have the bench you wanted. Definitely didn't have the starting lineup you wanted, I think, midfield especially. So I give big credit to him and the coaching staff. I think players like Koundé at right back as well, by the way, have been underrated in the last few months. Very, very good. You look at João Cancelo as well, has been absolutely fantastic, I thought, again at left back. Araujo came in and did well. Stegen made a good save in the first half. But I look at those full backs in particular, thought they were really, really good. Koundé is someone who's been getting a lot of stick of late again, a bit like Rafinha. So I just like give him his flowers because I thought he was top last night.
I'm interested to even know when this season is done, how I'm going to think about Koundé's season, because he got hurt and he was not great. And it took him about a month and a half, 2 months to get back. But he was arguably Barcelona's second, third best player for the first 2 months, along with Gabi. And the last 3 weeks, he has been Barcelona's third most consistent player over the last 3 weeks, alongside Lamine Yamal and Cubarsí, which is, again, insane to say. But you're right, Koundé was excellent yesterday, and his chemistry with Lamine Yamal, I don't know the last time, because I do think back to even Dembélé. I don't know who Dembélé really worked well with. I think back to Semedo. I think back with, I mean, him and Dest was an atrocity. It wasn't even than Dembélé. It was just, I felt like Dest was better when Dembélé was on the field, and Dembélé was better when it was awful. Yeah. I don't understand why their chemistry was so terrible. And to have Koundé and Lamine Yamal building that understanding, which does bring me to the point, another thing that Xavi got right in the substitutions. Or Romeu is likely not going to be an FC Barcelona player next year. I think that's kind of what I can even say about his performance. He was fine. He didn't do anything wrong, but Barcelona did lose a little bit of control even. And Christensen, for all of his lack of ball playing from the midfield, the fact that you put a natural midfielder on in that position and you lose a little bit of your calma, if you will, it's an indictment on Ori Romeu. But what they did add control to the game with was Sergio Roberto, who was, I mean, really, really good for a player that, and I know the bar had been low because he hadn't played in 2 months. And also I think with this fan base as well, and maybe it is that he's been around for so long, they almost take him for granted a little bit, but also he's always been just that, let's say, mid-card player, right? He's never had to be a star. He's always been the player that, even when the Luis Enrique teams, was he the 10th or 11th player on the team sheet? Probably. And because he's playing in an unnatural position at right back, and then he even plays midfield. It's like, well, is he actually good enough to be a midfielder in a Champions League winning side? Probably not. He's not a starter in a Champions League winning side, but he is a captain of this team. He's the first captain. He's a Catalan captain. He's all those things. And I'm not sure how much this is Roberto, how much this is Xavi, but the decision to put Roberto and add him in on the left side and then switch Gundogan over to the right to kind of control the buildup, because in the first half, Gundogan also very underrated game yesterday. Everything, if you look at the heat map and the pass map, everything was running through him in the first half. And I tried to mark it out a few moments when he wasn't dribbling. He wasn't trying to push in that space. He was just being the experienced head in the midfield. And that allowed Fermín López and Rafinha to use their legs. It allowed Christensen to kind of just, again, defend, not worry about building up. So Gundogan's so good there. And then by moving him to the right to support Koundé and Lamine Yamal, that did slow things down a bit. That did give Barcelona a little bit of calm. And Roberto's, it was interesting to note too with that heat map, Roberto's average position was higher than Fermín López. meaning Barcelona, once Napoli had in the first 15 minutes of that second half begun to attack, because that's what they were trying to do. Good job by Calzona. He brought his team out with more intensity. They start the second half really well, and they move that line of confrontation higher. And Xavi's counter to that in the 60th minute was to move Roberto higher, which again seems counterintuitive, but you want to say the Barca way? It's not even the Barca way. It's the way Man City plays. It's again the way that Bayern play. Every good team now, that's why you almost substitute an attacker for a defender when you're trying to control a game and attack better. And by attacker, I mean like a midfielder, whatever, higher up the field, because you're trying to move that line of confrontation higher. And that's what Barcelona did through Roberto. I thought he added, it's a crazy thing to say, but I think he added some steel, some grit, some metal into that midfield. Roberto had 8 ball recoveries in just 30 minutes of action.
Mm.
Yeah, he was fantastic playing in that more centralized position while Fermín López had been a bit more vertical with it. He just kind of controlled everything, calmed everything down. And again, that control in the game felt odd because the numbers and everything looking at it in hindsight says Barcelona actually had more control than it looked like they did. But to your point, I remember the Lindstrom chance and I'm like, wait a second, that's what Europe is. That's why I was still worried. That's why we're all on the edge of our seats, because it had been 4 years and Europe doesn't care about heat maps and numbers and everything in hindsight. Europe is about individual moments. And yeah, Barcelona could have been at 2-2 if Lindstrom puts out the back net, but he didn't. And so in hindsight, Xavi got it right.
Yeah, typical football. That, I mean, it's all details. I look at a lot of our games last season, the 1-0s that we're so praised for, right? And I mean, I think I've watched the highlights of a few of them, and I watched them and I thought, I mean, how on earth have we not conceded in some of those games? Genuinely, I think maybe was it Getafe at home, Celta at home, both 1-0. You look at Athletic Club away, 1-0. Valencia at home, 1-0. I mean, and I could go on and on and on. And there were moments in those games where this season we'd concede that chance, and it's like, we dropped points. Last season we didn't. Football's margins, it always is. But to your point last night about the substitutions, I think we struggled at the start of the second half. And I was thinking, this is going to be a really, really difficult half to get through. I was just thinking, this is only going one way, isn't it? How have we done this? Because we looked so comfortable at 2-0 and then bang, without a goal, of course, in the first half. And then second half, they started really bright, Napoli. They had the Balotelli with a shot just wide of the post. Osimhen went down for a potential penalty. Felt like they were building a bit. But those substitutions, I'm not going to lie, when I saw those two come off the bench, I thought, we could be in big trouble here. Just because, obviously, Romeo, we know, has had a really difficult season. Hasn't been at a good level, let's just be honest. Sergio Berto, 2 months out, you almost don't know what you're going to get with him sometimes either. And I thought, you know, who is he going to bring these guys on for? I also was scared that I thought one of them was going to be Rafinha. And I thought that's going to lose us a lot of energy, a lot of attacking impetus as well. But I think to be fair, he got it spot on. We were losing control of an important European game. And actually, I think both those players did a good job. Romeo, maybe not so much as Roberto, but I think still wasn't bad at all, Romeo. Wasn't bad at all, actually, considering he's come on sometimes in games. At the first minute, he nearly gave the ball away. But other than that, in other games, he's looked like, you know, he's just got a mistake in him every time he gets the ball. Last night, I thought he was a lot better. Recycled possession really well. Was a bit of a presence in there for Napoli to deal with, quite weirdly, I thought. And then Roberto just whipped out one of those Sergio Roberto performances that you get every now and then, and was absolutely brilliant. You know, like you said, he added the calm, the pulse that you get from La Masia. The way he moved the ball around was really good. Yeah, getting Gundogan on the other side of the pitch was great too. I think Gundogan's role just, or his importance in the game went up about 3 notches when Roberto came on the pitch too. And of course, it was those two who linked up for the final goal, and it was a brilliant goal as well. But it was a fantastic performance from Roberto off the bench, to be fair to him. He could have shot, and I thought he was going to shoot, just open up his body with his right foot, but perfect pass to Lewandowski. And I mean, to be fair, that's where Lewandowski needs to be. I don't think he was overly involved in the game, but, you know, we need him in the 6-yard box, I suppose, for those sorts of moments, and that's where he was. So, yeah, Roberto with a brilliant piece of impact off the bench. And I think a lot of us, Gules, can admit that when we saw that double substitution in the 58th or whatever minute it was, we were all thinking, ooh, we could be in trouble here. So to be able to come back and say, you know, well done to Xavi for that is, you know, something worth doing.
Yeah, I find in the last like 3 weeks of the month, as Lewandowski's also started scoring a little bit more too,
yeah,
I think he's letting the game come to him a little bit better than he was. I think he was really pushing when Barcelona were kind of needing him, and that wasn't doing him any favors. And I think the less he does, the better an impact he has. And I don't really have anything negative to say, but to your point, Lewandowski didn't really do anything, but also
no.
What he was asked to do and he did what he had to do, and he supported Lamine Yamal, and he made the right runs, and he dropped in to allow Fermín López to come out. And so he's creating space for others. And in his body language, I find, and I'll mention this too about Lewandowski, when Xavi said and announced that he was going to leave, Lewandowski had that party with the whole team, not a party, to get, he was happy about it, but I'm saying, like, he brought everybody together at his house, I believe, he hosted this get together. And I really find it interesting that that timeline, Lewandowski has been much better, much more refined, and even his body language, I think, has been way better since Xavi announced he was leaving, which seems like an odd correlation causation type thing. Or that, but I don't think I am. I think Lewandowski, you could even see in the frustrations in these matches, he's not emoting in as much. It just seems like he's being much more controlled in the opportunities he's not getting, and that's making him feel like much more of a team player. And I think the testament to that is the space that he created, because of the three goals that we talk about with Fermín López and Cancelo, and then obviously he scores the third one, but in the buildup, not to say he was nowhere to be found, but he was allowing everybody else to run into the space where he'd usually just be kind of pointing at the ground and calling the ball to feet. Instead, he's moving and allowing others to run into the space that he would occupy. And he's been feasting on rebounds and the efforts that find him wide open when he's not making it all about himself and being the focus, because he's still Lewandowski. So the defenders and everybody still has to worry about him. And it doesn't matter, Lewandowski, if you score or Fermín López scores. I know that you're getting paid to score, and Fermín López is barely getting paid to be on the bench because his contract is perfect for what Barcelona need from him. So to get five goals from Fermín López at his number, that's pretty terrific. Now, Pablo, it has been, what? I think we've gone 20 minutes without talking about Pau Cabarsí, so I'm going to have to go back about Pau Cabarsí, because I want to talk about that offside trap too, because that was a risk. Barcelona now, again, I'll take you a month when results were not going their way. That offside trap looked putrid. It looked flying. It was worrying. It wasn't working. And yet, against Osimhen, who is one of the fastest and most accomplished strikers in Europe, at least for the last 36 months, to say, all right, we're going to take a 17, just on paper, we're going to take a 17-year-old kid, and we're going to run this offside trap. We're going to run a high line against Victor Osimhen. Great idea, right? On paper, if it doesn't work out, Osimhen scores four yesterday, and it's an absolute disaster. But instead, Barcelona has been terrific with the offside trap now, and credit to Tactico Moderno, who had said that in the last six games, the Barcelona has caught the opposition offside 4.5 times per game, compared to the season average in both Champions League and the Liga of 2.5 times per game before that, meaning since Cabarsí has become a regular starter, it has gone up double. So two times the usual rate with Cabarsí playing in that offside trap. Another credit to the fact that Xavi has entrusted this 17-year-old to get the best out of the way that he wants to play, which again is with that offside trap. And it's been better than when Christensen was back there. It's been better when Iñigo Martínez was starting back there. It's been better when Koundé was playing at center back there. Cabarsí has been better on the offside trap as a center back than all three of those together this season, which again is an incredible testament to just how good this kid can be. But the fact that Xavi again has adjusted his tactics to how good this 17-year-old is, which is a credit to both of them. But yeah, that stat blows me away. And to your point about the tackle, we don't really need to litigate it again about he had that tremendous tackle in the first 7 minutes, which again means that if you're going to play the offside trap, your defenders have to get it right. They can't foul. They can't, because that's a red card if he doesn't get it perfectly right. But he got it perfectly right. And then, as you mentioned too, the tackle that wasn't a penalty. Well, I think they're not supposed to do this, but I wonder if VAR saw that he was offside and then said, hey, don't worry about this at all. We don't need to look at this, because if the ref blows the whistle to have VAR look at it, I think they call him offside anyway. If that was a penalty, if that was enough contact because they were slowing it down, and, you know, obviously a lot of Real Madrid accounts were saying that it was a penalty, the same way that Barcelona accounts say that Real Madrid stuff is all penalties. That even if it was a penalty on contact, it would have been ruled out offside. So again, I think for two different circumstances, I'm saying I don't think it's something to talk about, and I kind of just want to put that one to bed. Do you agree?
Yeah, it wasn't. To be fair, I also saw something zoomed in today, I think on Son Abdelgrana, who do a lot of this refereeing decisions and whatnot. It actually looked like, if anything, Osimhen kicked Cabarsí's foot when you really zoom in on it. That was a ultra zoom in that one, but I didn't see that time. At the time, I thought that could be a penalty, But like you said, I mean, caught offside anyway, so it wouldn't have been one. So it wasn't a topic at all. But you're right about the risk of the high line. And we've actually been caught out badly a few times this season on the high line. I was thinking of Almeria at home. I thought we got it awfully wrong. I think it was Baptiste Al got in behind. That was just a terrible game. But that period, I think, was our worst of the season, where I looked at us and didn't recognise us as a Barcelona team. But we're slowly getting past those days, I think. But I saw that stat last night also on Twitter, and it's evident. I mean, Osimhen was caught offside so many times. Whether that was his fault at the start, I'm not sure. But to be fair, the Barca line was really, really good. It was really, really strong, and Kubacic's been a big part of that. I think when we got it wrong, maybe was on the throw-in, to your point, maybe Barca being sloppy and sleepy off throw-ins. Cancelo left his man, obviously, but him and Kubacic were nice and high, but then Araujo and Koundé were a bit deeper, and then you sort of had, you know, the 2-2 in different areas of the pitch. But so we got caught out a little bit there for that goal.
You know what? That goal didn't track his man. I mentioned.
Yeah.
I don't want to let him look on that. He didn't track. Yeah. He tracked. I mean, it's a center back coming into midfield with
him. It was, yeah.
That's on the midfielder or even the forward to track that run.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, they did a stellar job of it, to be fair, I think, all night. And, I mean, you make the point that, like, Osimhen is the sort of player that Barcelona hate playing in Europe. They hate playing the quick attackers. Barca often have hated playing, you know, quicker attackers rather than, you know, technically superb ones, which Osimhen can be as well. He's such a killer as well. But I mean, just historically, it's a player like Iñaki Williams has always caused Barcelona more issues than Iñaki Williams might cause to any other team in La Liga because of the way Barcelona play. And that's just been the way, you know, forwards that go in behind always wreak havoc to us. That just is the Barca way with how we play. So for us to be doing that well against Osimhen is a testament to that defence last night, which is really, really good. And we've looked better defensively in recent weeks. The stats are saying it too, and that's positive. You know, the chance, you know, it's one of those, like you said, Champions League against margins. The Lindstrom header should have been a goal. Should have been 2-2, if you put it that way. But at the same time, you know, teams miss chances. We also miss chances in that game. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. But I think overall, we've got a lot to be happy about with our defence, you know, considering that there are players missing in midfield as well. That maybe means that balance isn't great. It hasn't been great all season, in all truth, even with everyone fit, I will say that. So I think that's just been a universal problem all season, really.
Well, another positive thing I'll say about Koundé too, before we kind of wrap up individual stuff, was that Kvaratskhelia, over the course of two legs, didn't really do anything. For a guy that's supposed to be 80 to 100 million in the summertime, I think the idea of him coming to Barcelona has basically been summed up in a tie, that Barcelona, not only would they not spend 80 million on a left winger like that, because they desperately obviously need like a consistent left winger who plays left wing, but if Koundé is going to shut him down the way it did, that almost kind of disqualifies him a little bit. And again, a testament to Koundé, just how good he was. And Christensen as well, too. On the, what was it, the second goal, the one in transition, the counterattack, Christensen came out on Kvara because Koundé had dropped in, and Christensen kind of made him delay. And by that fact that Kvaratskhelia could not get to the end line the way he wanted to, and he cut him back out, Napoli had brought in additional numbers with that extra time to support that, which left room in behind. Because again, once Lamine Yamal flipped that ball over and popped over, now they had a 3-on-2 in transition. Lamine Yamal makes the right choice, and Cancelo gets the rebound on the Rafinha post. And that's how quickly it all happens. But that all begins because Christensen had moved over, communicated well with Koundé. And on that offside trap as well, Barcelona's defense has improved. And again, it's the things we can't hear or see since Ter Stegen came back too. It's not a knock on Iñaki Peña, but you mentioned that Almeria line. It was Christensen and Araujo with Iñaki Peña in behind. So all those miscommunications that I would write about between Iñaki Peña and Araujo are gone, because that trust between Araujo and Ter Stegen exists. And I think Araujo and Koundé, again, their level has improved since Ter Stegen came back as well. And I think all of those things are combined, because Ter Stegen isn't just about, and a goalkeeper's job is not just about to be the guy who makes the save. It is. It's a thing that we remember them by, but it's also throughout a game when they're not doing anything, or when the other team is in possession, or when we're playing out of possession. How is he communicating? How is he the leader? How is he the eyes on the field by being the guy with, the best vantage point of what's in front of him? And that is Ter Stegen. So I think all those things are combined. Now, going ahead, let's just end this with a little bit of negativity, believe it or not. We were too positive, and you know how it is on this kind of show. Like, you know, being too positive is exhausting, Pablo. So let me calm it down a little bit. The only negative thing, really, is that Lamine Yamal played another 90 minutes, And I've said, I don't even want to see the kid until El Clasico. Not that say that Liga doesn't matter, because you're right. Atletico Madrid on paper is probably an even more difficult game on the weekend than Napoli was. And you need Lamine Yamal. You need Pau Gabarsi. But also, I need them in 5 years. I need them in 10 years. Because you said about Twitter, I think that those two, I'm hoping that we're talking about it after Twitter's already gone, you know, dead and gone, because the way the social media works, there are going to be other things. Hopefully I'm talking about them until way after the lifespan of Twitter. But in the big picture now, if you're Xavi, you still have a very limited team, though. You have a very limited team. For better or worse, you now have two additional games added to the schedule, which, again, I know it sounds like a crazy complaint. I'm not complaining that Barcelona are in the quarterfinals and have added two extra games because, again, they get the money from it and it's a big stage for all these young players. It's great. But now for Xavi, how do you navigate Atletico Madrid and the Tuesday to, was it, they play on Saturday or Sunday? What is it?
Against Atleti, Sunday.
On Sunday, right. So Tuesday to Sunday is pretty helpful. Having that 5-8 instead of 3 or 4 or 5, that's, it's helpful to have the full week or the 5 days, the longest you can get. But yeah, so how do you navigate this now moving forward with Xavi, adding those two additional games to your schedule and just making sure that you protect these kids? Because you have those big nights and now you kind of have to go in protect mode.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah. It's one of those, isn't it? Because we're buzzing to be in the quarterfinals, but at the same time, people might not be so buzzing, you know, when they see who we're drawn against, mm-hmm. or they see the final score after the quarterfinals. Genuinely, because like, what happens if we get hammered again? Which is a possibility, by the way, this season, you know. We've not been in a great state. What happens if we get absolutely mauled by Man City or Real Madrid beat us 4-1 again? Or Bayern Munich, as they always do, just hammer us 3-0? Both games? You know, that's not pleasant either. You know, and people might look back at being, you know, all over the moon here, which they're right to be, but you might look at that and say, well, that's just putting even more downer on the season, hasn't it, really, to just get absolutely leathered in the quarterfinals. In terms of those two players, I think it becomes even more worrying that you think about they'll definitely start against Atleti on Sunday. And then it's not like they have 2 weeks off, because they will be in Luis de la Fuente's squad as well for Brazil and Colombia, I believe, anyway. And Lamine definitely will. And I think Kubarsi will as well. There's just no way he won't.
I have also heard he might get a call to the U21s. So that's a pot. Kubarsi, I mean. Like, so that's possible. But, I mean, yes, Lamine Yamal certainly in his first team. But, yeah, we'll see about Kubarsi. But
yeah, we got to be so careful. I've heard, obviously, the Olympics of this summer as well. That was the Pedri killer. I mean, that could be the Kubarsi killer. We just have to be so careful with this, honestly. And it's such a tough one, isn't it? Because when you've got players playing like that, it's like, what would you do? You know, not play them last night, and then what? There's a chance we go out. But it's also, you know, you don't want to play them at the same time. So it's one of those, Xavi's got to pick his moments. He really does. I mean, and just take them out the firing line for some of those games. There's no other choice, really. So, yeah.
Atletico Madrid. I think
we're
going to start João Félix against any team, literally just one team. He had 8 of 10 games or 9 of 10 games this season, and it was against Real Betis and it was against Atletico Madrid. The two games that was really, really two thumbs up. You were great. You were one of the best three players on the field. Fortunate, I think, even at Atletico Madrid, because you can start João Félix on the left and you can start Rafinha on the right. And Lamine Yamal did not start this game.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know whether Xavi's going to do that, though. But, you know, that would be the thing to do in terms of to rest them, especially in the knowledge that they're going to be playing with Luis de la Fuente as well. So, yeah, in terms of resting those guys, that's what we do. And then in terms of the rest of the season, I mean, La Liga to me has been and is dead, the title race anyway, but I think Barcelona need to and can solidify second quite quickly, actually. Because I think Girona are going to keep dropping points. We've got to keep winning games. And I mean, Sunday's game is going to be an incredibly, incredibly difficult one, by the way. I mean, to get 3 points there would be, to me, more surprising than even getting past Napoli. I'm actually going to say that because I think it would to me personally, because I just think that's going to be incredibly difficult for this Barcelona team to muster up a win. But hey, you know, let's see how Atleti get on tonight in the Champions League against Inter. And they've not been in good form at all. But I just can imagine them at home at the Metropolitano, you know, against Barca on a Sunday night, they'll smell a bit of like blood in a way, and they get well up for those games. But and then after that, yeah, I mean, La Liga, you sort of just consolidating it then, and then all the focus on the Champions League. But yeah, my point is that, you know, we might look at the end of those two legs in the quarterfinals and be a little bit more scarred than we were when we went into them. But at the same time, you know, you have to be in these positions. I don't think there's any good in saying I'd rather have gone out, you know, with a 2-1 loss to Napoli than to save myself getting hammered by Bayern. There's no point playing football then. Just resign at the start of the season. You know, don't enter the competition. So, you know, I say go for it. And who knows what we can conjure up. You know, teams are faltering this season. Not everyone's perfect. And if we play like we did last night, we're not a million miles away from making a real impact. Pedri and De Jong should be back too. Ferran Torres is a big player for us too. So we have a bit more firepower in, and, you know, fingers crossed, no more injuries up until then too. Then we'll give a team a game here.
To your point, that's what's so interesting about the rest of this season, is that even though Barcelona, what if, that is the what if, that is the optimist has a silver lining. Yeah, what do you play for? Why, I mean, Barcelona at this point still have to face, to your point, Atletico Madrid. Now, this game will be over by the time this comes out, but if they fall to Inter, let's say hypothetically they fell to Inter today, and they just came off that 2-0 loss to Cadiz, that means they've lost two games in a row, and Barcelona are in better form than they are. In both the league and in Europe, if that was the case. And Barcelona are in a good moment at the moment. So if anything, form would say that Barcelona are the better team there. They also, that being Barca, have Girona and Real Madrid in back-to-back weeks still. And so, yes, you're right. 8 at this point, as I've said too, historically, going down 13 or 11, whatever it was, the nadir, you don't come back from that. It doesn't happen in the Liga historically. Barcelona would really have to have a miracle. They'd really have to have something go right. And if Real Madrid dropped that many points, you'd think that Girona had also made up points in that way, that there would have been a tighter race there. But yes, while first and second and third, I think to your point, Girona is likely still to lose points. And as I said, even down 1 point to them, Barcelona has the opportunity to just get 3 points against Girona. And now they've got second. And that's all it's going to take in theory. So to your point, yeah, what do you play for? You play to play in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. You play to have the Liga still to play for against Atletico Madrid and Girona and Real Madrid, and not have to say, all right, let's take care of business just against Almeria and Celta and Sevilla and Mallorca, and say we basically backed our way into second or third in the league because, you know what I mean? We got the points that we were supposed to get. And yeah, because that 4-2 loss to Girona just looks uglier and uglier as the weeks go on, even as they've kind of lost some form. And again, getting blown off the field by Real Madrid in a Clasico, not great. But I also look at that period and say Barcelona were in kind of their worst way when that happened. And now Barcelona are doing a bit better. And as you said, if they can half glass full, but you're right. Now, in theory, if De Jong comes back at the appropriate time and can reinforce that midfield, and if Ferran Torres can come back and basically do what João Félix has been able to do with him out, because that's sort of thing too about João Félix. You expected with Ferran Torres out in this time and Lamine Yamal needing to be rotated because he's 16 years old, that João Félix is going to be able to take that moment by the take that bull by the horns. But he's not a starter under Xavi. He's a rotation piece. And I think, you know, his time at Barcelona might be over, but is his time with Barcelona over with just Xavi? Or yeah, I don't know how it's going to move on, but it seems like Xavi's made his choice and Ferran Torres is higher on the depth chart even than João Félix. So if Ferran Torres is ready to go into Atletico Madrid, I don't think he starts anyway, but I think you have an opportunity. And to your point too, I think Xavi against Atletico Madrid, because Barca are in a good moment, I don't think he wants to lose that moment. And I know he loves the club and he'll love the club from the sidelines when Lamine Yamal might be burned out, if that makes any sense. So as a manager of Barcelona, yeah, you got to kind of have to start your best attacker who just happens to be 16 years old.
But yeah.
Well, I'm going to give you the final word here. Yeah, I mean, even in ending this on a negative note, I don't think we were that negative. I think this was, as I said, the biggest win of the season. Not necessarily Barcelona's best performance, but I think it was their best performance in Europe of the season. That I will say even. Because I don't really count that, no offense to our Antwerp, but I don't really count that 5-0. But I think this was their best, most assured performance in Europe this season. And I think the game that I come out of the most optimistically this whole year.
Yeah, yeah, no, fair enough. And I think that's right, you know, as well. I think that's the natural thing for the whole fan base. We haven't been in the Champions League quarterfinals since 2020, you know, 4 years now. We had a lot of injuries going into this game. It was 1-0, it was in the balance. We haven't been in good form this season. It's been a difficult season. And we played really well. We deservedly got through to the quarterfinals. Our youngsters starred. It was a good night. It was a happy night for Barcelona. And that's what people can leave with. The rest of the season is going to be interesting. La Liga, whoever the heck we draw in the Champions League quarterfinals, which is going to be incredibly interesting on Friday, by the way. And then we'll see what happens. But last night against Napoli was really, really good. And it was a good win for Barca. Like I said, Lamine and Cubarsí starring. And people can be happy about that for now.
Yeah, I mean, with the draw, of course, yeah, this whole show might be redundant, but no offense to Dortmund and PSV, but hopefully it's Dortmund and PSV. That would be pretty fortuitous, but also it could be the computer gods might say that it's time for Real Madrid. And
yeah, I know, yeah.
Like that. All right, so follow Pablo wherever you get him, and again, he's making appearances on Barca Live with Robert and company too, so. And it's going to be difficult to get your time, but I hope we continue to see you, Bob.
Yeah. I know. We'll see. Cheers again, Don, for having me on.
All right. So you can, again, follow him down in the description of the show notes below, and then follow us Twitter and Instagram at HelpMD13 for me, or at the Barcelona Podcast everywhere, including Patreon, where you get the shows. Again, as low as $3, you get the shows without the ads. On the audio version of that, close Facebook group and Discord. That's the conversation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel or give a good rating on the podcast app. But most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.